And now, it's time for the Talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello, good morning to you. 6 minutes past nine, Thursday the 18th of January 2024. How are you all out there across the Northwest and across the world, wherever you're listening or watching the show today? It's great to have you on board. And if you're not in the Northwest of Ireland, we all woke up to a very cold, snowy, crisp but fresh morning here. And it's a snow day for a lot of people, a lot of schools not opening, a lot of buses not running to those schools, hence the schools closing and what have you. And the roads generally quiet this morning. I was on the road a little bit earlier than normal this morning, just to ensure I got here. I have to say, we're kind of lucky in the south of the county in that from Lahey to Letterkenny, no bother at all. The gritters out, they did a brilliant job. Get into Letterkenny, not so, still slippy and slushy and slidey. I would still be cautious wherever I go. But last night, what about last night? So many people, particularly it seemed around Letterkenny and other urban areas, it was chaos. There were buses having to go through Lifford because they couldn't go up Lurgy Brack because there was four lorries jammed up there, and Long Lane, there was cars sliding all over the place. Round Road was terrible. There was cars stuck at the bottom of the main street, up the main street, around the main street. Were you out and about in it? What did you observe? Is there anything you want to talk about or pass on in relation to that? Well, that and all the other issues of the day, to WhatsApp and text 086 60 25000. If you're outside the Republic, it's 00353 86 25 60 25000. You know it, just drop the O and put 00353. You think in this day and age, and I'm sorry I've said it before, but maybe for not for a year, what's all this international dialing nonsense? But anyway, it is what it is. We want to hear from you wherever you are today. And if you're travelling through or in Northern Ireland, be extra cautious today because the roads are bad. The difference between the north and the south today is there's very little road maintenance ongoing, as you might well be aware. One of the, if not the biggest strike is taking place in Northern Ireland today. We're going to talk about that a little later on. But if you are travelling on the roads, there are only a couple of them that are treated. I think four routes minorly treated. So just be extra careful. Is there any information you want us to pass on, by the way? Please feel free to do so. Send it into us. We'll pass that on. And also to invite you, if you want to watch the show, maybe you have a snow day and you're not normally home when we're on air, you can watch us on your big screen TV. If it's a smart TV, as most are now at this stage, it'll have the YouTube app on it. Or if you have your Fire Stick or your Google TV, open the YouTube app, stick in Highland Radio Ireland. You can watch us on your big screen. Take us with you on those apps on your mobile devices, or we're streaming live too on Facebook, Highland Hub, Highland Radio News and Sport. Let's go to the Tyrconnell Tribune. With the New Year deadline now passed to cull up to 41,000 in-calf cows, political and dairy sources say they're continuing to monitor how farmers affected by the nitrates directive have fared and at what cost. Joe Sweeney, chair of Donegal IFA, says the cut from 250 kilograms of nitrates per hectare to a level of 220 from the start of January has forced farmers to reduce animal numbers or increase the amount of land they have. The third alternative was to export slurry to another holding with increased capacity. He said numbers of farmers have been forced to lease or buy more ground to retain their existing herd number, and this is coming at a very high price. In some instances, it's not affordable and poses a real threat to keep younger generations in farming. The Donegal News this morning, after a collaborative cross-community campaign and much criticism, there is optimism for the retention of counselling services for children and adolescents in Donegal. A crunch meeting between the Child and Family Agency, TUSLA, and Rafoe Diocesan Pastoral Services took place on Tuesday in a bid to maintain the vital services. A statement issued by TUSLA yesterday evening said, "We are committed to working with Rafoe Diocesan Pastoral Services to maintain the important counselling services they provide to communities across Donegal and to support the organisation going forward." That all being said, they didn't meet with the head of, the gentleman in question, his name just escapes me at the moment, didn't meet with the head of those services at all. It was a very, very brief meeting. And there is one line in that statement which jumps out at me, and I am going to be seeking further clarity on it. I'm just trying to get to it here now. God, there was a lot of road stuff I posted last night. I didn't realise that. Okay, we will also look at how existing funding can be utilised to continue to provide essential supports. So that's what came from that statement. That's what jumped out at me. We will also look at how existing funding can be utilised to continue to provide essential supports. That's what they said in their initial press release. It's extra funding and extra supports that are needed. Also, if you read through the press release, Jerry Hone, regional chief officer with the Northwest Toosler, he is quoted extensively in that. He never met with the head of the service at all. But if you read the press release, you'd think he did. But anyway, I want to get an update on that to see if there is some room for hope. They're talking about it, but as I say, that one critical existing funding, how it can be utilised to continue the service, that's where we were at 2 or 3 days ago. So I'm not sure if things have moved on at all, but open to correction and open to hope. The Derry news this morning, Derry holds the record for the highest number of media gagging anonymity orders requested for defendants in drug-related court cases, Derry News can reveal. Between 2019 and 23, there were 329 anonymity or reporting restriction orders granted in courts across the north. Of those, 292 were in Derry and 5 were in Strabane. In comparison, 17 anonymity orders were granted in Laganside courts in Belfast, while there were fewer than 5 each granted in Newtownards, Antrim, Coleraine, Limavady, Ballymena and Dungannon. I presume they are there to protect parties from vigilante law, so to speak. I presume that's why they're being issued out. I'm not sure if it's a good or a bad thing because I don't know enough about it, but I would imagine that is precisely why they are being given out. The Irish Times this morning, Northern Ireland will come to an unprecedented standstill today as up to 170,000 public sector workers take part in the largest strike in Northern Ireland in generations. Members from 17 trade unions, including nurses, midwives, bus and train drivers, teachers and ambulance staff, are involved in the 24-hour industrial action, which has closed schools, suspended public transport and cut healthcare provision to emergencies only, and of course has damaged the gritting programme. We'll talk about that a little later on in the show. If you're one of those workers, if you want to explain to us why you're having this strike, maybe some of you might feel like a pawn in the leveraging the British government is placing on the DUP. The DUP would argue that this money could be given to pass on to the staff without devolved government. But anyway, it is a caveat that is there in place. If you want to talk about that, if you're calling us from the north, it's 00353 749125000. So yesterday too, it was mentioned by government, and it was in the papers, as to the 10 places that have the most refugees, asylum seekers, IPAS, whatever phraseology you choose to use, would get money, throw money at it. And we didn't really know what that might look like, but this is what it looks like. Delivery here. I would love to see the KPIs on this. We'll need key performance indicators. But anyway, apparently extra nurses in GP practices, more reserve Gardaí and additional English language teachers for schools are some of the options on the table as part of a new package of state supports for areas which have taken the most migrants. GPs may receive more staff, such as nursing assistants or other roles filled by local workers under some of the proposals being discussed. Schools could be in line for extra English language teachers as well as additional coordinators who are tasked with finding school places for children and supporting schools to meet the needs of these children. The provisions of additional reserve Gardaí is also on the table. The Garda numbers approach, as Garda numbers approach 15,000, Taoiseach Leo Varadkar asked government departments to come up with possible measures that can be put in place across the 10 regions nationwide which have taken in the most migrants since the invasion of Ukraine. Any teachers out there, you're not at school today, would more teachers fix the problems that we're talking of? If you're a GP listening, perhaps, or work in a GP practice, do you see extra nurses coming to Donegal through this government initiative? And also, too, are we likely to see more Gardaí? There's a lot of problems with the guards, you see, and you have to dig into this stuff a little bit. Obviously, there was a big furore about policing in Dublin. So they got out the kitty and put 10 million euro in extra resources to have extra Gardaí in Dublin. That money's run out now and it hasn't been replaced. So that issue, that problem-solving move has now sort of run out, so to speak. So are they going to take those guards and move them to the top 10 counties with the most migrants, including Donegal? Would that be enough for you? I don't know. The Irish Daily Mail, Minister Heather Humphreys has rebuked those protesting outside asylum centres, questioning how they can demonstrate in the middle of the day when everyone else is working. The Fine Gael TD also insisted that immigration has been good for Ireland and is helping to pay for pensions with PRSI contributions from foreign nationals amounting to €3 billion per annum. The Social Protection Minister, her robust defence of immigration policy follows mounting pressure on government after weeks of protests and a series of arson attacks on properties earmarked as accommodation for those seeking asylum. Also inside this paper today, more speculation on a plum European job. And Charlie McConlogue's name's been chucked back into the mix again. The race for Ireland's next European Commission commissioner is firmly between two Fianna Fáil cabinet ministers, the Irish Daily Mail has learned. The contest for the €248,000 job is between Agriculture Minister Charlie McConlogue and, would you believe it, Housing Minister Dara O'Brien. Ireland will nominate a new commissioner following the European elections in June. The current office holder is Fine Gael MEP Mairead McGuinness, who holds the financial services portfolio. Now, Ivan Yates was on the show. He says they're looking for a woman, but clearly, according to the Mail, that's not the case. Charlie McConlogue not entertaining the speculation. He says it's idle speculation, but they speculate, be it as it may. Mr. McConlogue, a TD for Donegal, is viewed as the favourite to replace her, with his possible departure promoting the political re-emergence of party veteran Pat the Cope Gallagher, who lost his Dáil seat in 2020. Mr. McConlogue has a fight on his hands in the area in the next general election, with the mica crisis in particular having cost him support locally. Were he to depart for Brussels, a seasoned campaigner like Pat the Cope Gallagher would be a prime candidate to replace him. Now, that would be... I don't see how that strategy works. I think maybe if they had a two-candidate strategy, but maybe there are other people that could run in place in Inishowen. Anyway, the Irish Farmers Journal this morning. Private agricultural advisors have been told by the Agricultural Consultants Association to down tools this week in protest over what they say are unmanageable knowledge transfer scheme deadlines. The ACA has written to the Department of Agriculture seeking more leniency with the terms and conditions of the scheme. By the 31st of March, advisors must have completed all one-to-one KT meetings with farmers, which are the last 2 hours each, but they are limited to hosting just two meetings per day. So that might make sense to you if you're waiting on one of those meetings. On to the Irish Daily Star now. Thruples, that's three people in a marriage, if you don't mind, as if one's not enough, says you. Thruples and those in polygamous relationships will not be given constitutional protection if a referendum on expanding the definition of a family passes, Roderick O'Gorman has stated. The Equality Minister made the comments as the debate on the upcoming referendum got underway in the Dáil yesterday afternoon on March 8th. Citizens will be asked to vote in several referenda. One focuses on removing a clause in the Constitution that implies a woman's place is in the home. It will also expand the Constitution protection of families to those in durable relationships. Now, I'm not a constitutionalist. I don't really know how Roderick O'Gorman can answer that question, because obviously, the Constitution is laid out. And then, you know, there are test cases or challenges in the courts that perhaps could see protections extended to thruples and those in polygamous relationships. I don't think the Constitution can be read just as such. You know, someone could take a challenge and say, well, I believe that the wording of the Constitution permits such and such, and then that really determines what the actual law is, doesn't it? Again, maybe someone out there is more of a constitutionalist than me, but I actually don't really feel how Roderick O'Gorman can fully give that commitment. The Star tells us that Irish beef exports to China are to resume as part of measures agreed during the bilateral meeting of senior government figures. Li Quang, the second most powerful man in China, met the Taoiseach during a brief diplomatic visit yesterday. The president shaking hands with China, and that's fine, that's up to him. But I wonder, does the president know what's going on in China? Does he know about the prison camps? Does he know about the religious cleansing that's going on over there? Or do we just turn a blind eye because we post some meat out there, we send some meat out there? We are kind of morally questionable, aren't we? Like, you know, Russia bad, China good. And I'm not saying that's not the case. But I wonder, did he take the opportunity to talk to China about how it treats its people over there? its attitude towards Taiwan. No, we'll shake hands with you because we'll get to sell you some beef, and that's fine. And is that how the world goes round? The Sun this morning, the HSE and a GP have apologised before the High Court over the treatment provided to a young boy after he swallowed a button battery. And these are really dangerous. I'm sure there's people out there listening today that, you know, the screw didn't go in or one was left lying around and kids put them in their mouths. Aaron Sikorsky was only 13 months old when he swallowed the battery while playing at home. The court heard it was 9.5 days before a chest x-ray was carried, despite Aaron being taken to the GP and the ED at Galway University Hospital. And they can do really quite severe damage in terms of burning in the throat or stomach or what have you. I think it's particularly if it sticks in the craw, so to speak. Anyway, compensation was paid. Okay, good morning to Rosemary. Pedro, Dolores, travelling to Sligo. Take care, Dolores. I think really once you get out of Letterkenny, it's not too bad, as long as you drive safe. Beth, Charlie, Paul, Michael, all listening or watching the show across our social media platforms. Keep us busy in Radio Land as well. WhatsApps and texts to 086 60 25,000, or call us on 07491 25,000. And we are going to be talking now about school safety. We're going to go to Glenties. Hugh Doyle is chaplain and coordinator of the Students' Council in St. Columba's Comprehensive School in Glenties and is with us now. Good morning to you, Hugh. Thank you for your time.
Hello, Greg. How are you?
I'm okay, Hugh. Now, what is the situation at St. Columba's?
Well, we've recently had a new school crossing installed there by Donegal County Council. So we're very happy about that now. We've been campaigning for a couple of years now through our student council, and we have two members of the student council on here as well to take you through that process if you wish.
Yeah, for sure. Lucy McFadden, good morning to you, Lucy.
Hello.
And Jade Gallagher is there as well. Hiya, Jade.
Hello, how are you?
I'm all right. I'll stay with you, Jade. So there's a crossing there now. What's the problem?
So it was brought to our attention by our PE teacher that is just the road was too dangerous to cross to go to our football pitch to like play football in PE. So I'll pass it to Lucy because Lucy was the main person in this. So,
all right, go ahead, Lucy. No one wants to speak to me. It's you to Jade to Lucy, but come on, Lucy, go ahead. Go ahead.
So I reached out to our local councillors, Pierce Doherty, Anthony Malloy, and Mary Tress Gallagher, and it was around the start of the year in like the school year in 2021, and we just kind of all emailed back and forth, and there was a few bumps of the road because there was new infrastructure personnel being assigned to the area, so we had to kind of get over that, and then there was more emailing, but kind of by the time we got back to school this year, it seemed to all fit into place. So it seemed like no time, and the work was it was all happening, and it took a while, but now the zebra crossing's there and you can really see the benefits.
And it's really the real story for me here is, isn't it, that you took this issue on yourselves and made all the contacts and delivered it for the students.
We work together, like all our meetings we kind of discuss what we're going to talk about next in the email and like how we're going to keep pushing forward with it, because like at the start, it didn't seem like it was really going to go anywhere. It just seemed like we were emailing for nothing. But then eventually, the more we worked with it, the more it kind of, the ball started to get rolling, and it's happened now.
Yeah, brilliant. And Hugh, isn't it a credit to the students? And I think it really sets young people up for life, doesn't it? Learning how these systems works, how you get about achieving what you want to, you know, coming together, campaigning, discussion. Like, I think it's really a useful educational exercise as well.
Yeah, absolutely, Greg. I suppose the thing is, they, you know, student councillors can get despondent, you know, if they don't hear back from whoever they're contacting, and they can maybe give up. But the thing about the student council in Glenties Camp is that they kept going with this issue and with a number of other issues. And, you know, it may take a number of years, but eventually if they keep at it, they actually saw the fruits of their labour. And as Lucy said, it happened really quick in the end. Like, we had a site visit in May of last year with the workers on site then in September, and the work was completed there just last month in December 23. So we were delighted. We were delighted that, you know, a really concrete issue like this actually happened.
And Jade also, I mean, obviously we've talked about the crossing, but there's double yellow lines discouraging people from parking on footpaths and what have you. There's a whole raft of safety measures that have taken place here, Jade.
Yeah, no, the students have reaped the benefits 100%. Like, we just feel more safer crossing the road. And it's just, it's great, like.
Yeah, and I saw some pictures, Lucy. I'm not sure at your age if you're familiar with the old Beatles album cover of them crossing a road in London.
I know, I do.
It's not quite like that, but it kind of put me in mind of it, if that makes sense.
Now you say it, yeah, it does, actually.
How important, Lucy, is the council, the student council, and feeding into democracy through that? Because it's something that's grown over the last year, and with me being a job like this, I've kind of seen it grown and spoke to lots of different people involved at this level, and they do get things done. Because if you didn't, you could get very frustrated and say, "What's the point?" So, what do you see as the benefits of being involved in the student council at the school?
I love it. I love being given the chance to kind of voice my word on everything and that's happening in the school, and like just having a chance to change things, like issues like this. Like, I loved being given the opportunity to do it, like, because I think it's so important, because students don't necessarily, they won't bring every issue to the teachers. They'll more so come to people like us that they think that they can like speak to on like the same level as us. So like when we get told the issues from them, we can then take it to the meetings that with Mr. Doyle, and then we can actually change the things that the students want, not necessarily just the teachers want. So I think it's good that like there's it's at a student level too, that we can kind of all like have conversations about it.
Yeah, and that's a two-way street, isn't it, Hugh? Because you have to sort of have it set up in the school where the student's voice is heard and feels heard, and they're supported in campaigns such as this, you know, as I say. So it's great them having a voice, but the school also have to have the ears, which they're doing very well as well.
Yeah, we obviously have to listen to the students, but I think it's a real, real good learning for the student councillors that they engage with, you know, Mr. Mahoney and the principal, and they, you know, he can tell them, like, well, you know, this is possible, this might be possible, and so on, like, you know. So, you know, even there yesterday, we had a consultation on the new TY enrollment policy. So so every new policy in the school has to be consulted with the student council. So there's always feedback going back and forward between the student council and the management, and they meet once a year with the board of management as well. So I think it's really good for the students to learn, like, you know, they need certain things, or they want certain things. You know, how do we go about getting that in the most kind of efficient way? How do we work with, you know, the powers that be to achieve our goals?
All right. And Jade, too, there's a nice element to this as well, in that in years to come, you know, you and the rest of the council will be able to say, and if you ever have children, they'll probably be sickly you saying to them, "I did that, you know, it was us did that." But it's not just for the current batch of students. It's a safer environment for future students as well, Jade, which I would say is quite satisfying.
Yeah, no, like, it's great that we have the chance to influence these younger students, because, like, that's all we need. We need to build a future for the school, and I'm sure loads more things could be done at the school that, like, we would have just made the younger students more confident to even go for a position in the student council. Okay. And it would just be great.
Brilliant.
Yeah, I'm looking back on it when we're older. We'll always laugh about it.
Indeed, and now it's over to the motorists to respect it now and to realise that there is a different layout there when they're approaching. Oh, okay, brilliant, and fair play to the powers that be too, that also work very quickly on this. It's been lovely talking to you, Lucy McFadden. Thank you very much for your time, and Jade
thank
Gallagher.
You.
It's been lovely chatting to you. Hugh But Doyle, chaplain and coordinator of the Students' Council at St Columba's Comprehensive School, Glentis. He's open today, Hugh. Now, as you would have heard, nurses, teachers, civil servants and thousands more are on strike across Northern Ireland today. There have been several strikes in Northern Ireland in recent times, but this could be one of the biggest in years, if not the biggest. But why is it happening and what's being affected? Well, hopefully now, well, I'm sure actually, in fact, journalist Anton McCabe will be able to help answer some of those questions. Anton, thank you very much for joining us.
No problem at all, Greg, and thank you very much.
No, and you're speaking to us actually from a picket line at County Hall in Omagh. Right, so what services are being disrupted today through this action?
All public services. Obviously, health, schools are on strike. The civil service, public transport. Basically, the whole public sector, with the exception of councils, is on strike today.
And what is the core issue here, Anton?
Well, there are really two core issues. There are pay, in that people are due a pay rise, but there's a refusal to pay that. Linked to that as well, There has been a refusal to release monies to properly finance public services in the north, because I am sure that many of your listeners, you know, those who live in the north will have seen it. Those like virtually every in Donegal who regularly visit will have seen the decay, the decline of public services in Northern Ireland over the last few years. This also, so it means that the workers striking, they are not just striking on their own behalf, seeking pay rises. Very importantly, they are seeking to have proper investment in the public services, so that in many cases that they can have proper staffing levels, mm-hmm. particularly in the likes of, particularly so, in the likes of health, which is not just to their benefit, but to the benefit of every single person in Northern Ireland. Like, this will certainly be the biggest strike in the history of Northern Ireland. There's up to 150,000 workers have walked out. I just have walked across the centre of Omagh today, and we have pickets on whole numbers of public sector buildings in the town. Mm-hmm. You know, they said, like, you know, there are pickets right across the town, mm-hmm. Which is a sight really that has very rarely been seen here.
Now,
in the past.
Yeah, this could have been offset. The UK government, the London government, offered Northern Ireland political parties a funding package of £3.5 billion to return to a functioning executive at Stormont. Within that was £584 million to settle public sector pay claims. Now, it has been linked to the return of a functioning executive at Stormont. I would say there's ways around that this money could have been delivered without a functioning executive. Is there any anger that workers are being used as something of a pawn, or to being used to put the DUP over a barrel?
Yes, there's a huge amount of anger at that. There's a huge amount of anger that Chris Heaton-Harris could do this. The UK government could do this. But he is trying to use workers as a pawn to put pressure on the DUP. That is obviously shabby in the extreme. If we look at, within the last few days, the British government has gone to war with Yemen. This was not discussed, was not even discussed in Parliament, but had the legal power to do so. Thus, Heaton-Harris has the power, and the Sunak government, they have the power to release the funding and to fund. But they are very much playing political games in this matter.
But they have all the cards, do they not? Because no matter what happens in Northern Ireland, it's going to be, will anyone in England care, if you know what I mean. I don't mean that in any way badly. I mean, this is a Northern Irish problem, and I'm not really quite sure, even with all the services closing as they are now, if anyone is going to take any notice in London, because they will say, hey, we've got the money there. All it takes is for them to have a government. It's been so long without a government that people who aren't directly affected by it will say, well, listen, get their act together. The money's sitting there on the table. It's not our problem. So, and it's really only now impacting the people of Northern Ireland. Do you take my point, Anton, that this is not really an issue that's going to bother anyone outside Northern Ireland in Britain?
To a point, yes. But I think still, this is still very much putting on pressure. Because ultimately, the British government cannot cope with a part of their jurisdiction being closed down by strikes. And actually today, what is very important is that the gritter drivers are one of the groups on strike. As you're aware, we have got conditions where very much gritter drivers are needed. This is affecting, so obviously not just, well, it's affecting people, affecting movement in Northern Ireland, but it's actually also affecting many people in the border region, particularly Donegal, who are going to be travelling through the north here.
Well, listen, I can tell you we have a far bigger interest in Northern Ireland than the people of Surrey might have, for an example. I take that point. But back to how this is resolved, there's not really a vote that matters for Labour or the Conservatives in Northern Ireland, you could argue. If they were to release this money to settle this strike, they would be caving into the DUP, and the DUPs would feel emboldened in their demands to effectively go back 2-3 years and renegotiate the fallout from Brexit. It's hard for me to see how this gets resolved, especially, and I would maintain that I don't think they'll feel too much political pressure with everything else that's going on, like the Rwanda policy and so on and so forth in London.
Yes, but still we are in a fortunate position in many ways where we are dealing with a weak Tory government, which is open to pressure. And we have even seen here in the north, we have seen on, you know, for example, on the issue of legalising abortion, where the British government went above the heads of the DUP and the other Northern Ireland parties simply because what was happening was so much of a scandal.
Okay. How long is this strike scheduled to last for? It can't be, really. I'm not sure how it could be escalated.
At the moment, the current strike is to end at midnight. The gritter drivers, they are out until midnight on Tuesday next. Sorry, midnight on Wednesday next. Apologies. And there will be a stepping up of action. A number of the unions intend to not go away, but to step up their action in the weeks to come.
Okay, it's really had a huge effect, obviously, right across society in Northern Ireland. We'll see how things progress going forward. Anton, thank you so much for setting the scene. And I think really, and you painted a picture, what you're seeing in Omagh there with the pickets out on so many different places, it's borderline unprecedented.
Yes, it is. And I mean, today, there is also a march at 12:30 from the park and ride on the Crevner Road, finishing with a rally at 1 o'clock at the courthouse here in the town.
Okay, listen, thanks for the update, Anton. Take care of yourself. Stay warm.
Thank you, Greg.
Right, bye-bye.
Thank you.
Anton McCabe there, who is a journalist. Any input into that? 086 60 25,000. And as I say, I just don't think the London government really cares too much as to what's going on. But anyway, we shall see. Hi, Greg. Good to see the government going after student accommodation to house migrants. So where will the students go? But sure, you probably think it's a great idea. I don't know why you would say that. Why would you think I think it's a good idea? What? Give us one reason as to think you might think I've already concluded it's a good idea. Let's just have a chat. We don't have to have a go at each other. Come on and have a chat and tell me what you think about it rather than just making a comment and then presuming my position on it. Hi, Greg. Can you announce that move to the Beat convoy that was due to start today will be postponed for everyone's safety till next Thursday, the 25th of January? Thanks for updates and announcement. Kira from Fitness LK. More than happy to do that for you, Kira. Will extra funding be given to counselling services, youth clubs, voluntary and community services, as they often help and facilitate emigrants with open arms? Many foreign national children have nowhere safe to play indoors, and I've seen them enjoying a local youth club with smiles on their faces as if it was like Christmas. Some of these children are going through trauma after escaping their country, losing relatives and coming to a foreign land, and now they're stuck in a room with little place to stay. I'm not sure. There's a couple of things that have been announced over the last couple of days. The government running hotels in Ross Cray and money being given to the 10 counties with the most IPAS and refugees. We'll have to see. It hasn't been explained how that actually will work. Hi, Greg. Could you get someone on from Donegal County Council in charge of the roads department? Why are the roads so bad? Is it just sand the council lorries are putting on? Only in Ireland, Greg. We can do nothing right in this country in every department. Thanks. The person we'd like to speak to is unavailable today. I think just in terms of snow, I'm not really quite sure what salt and grit does with snow. It's very effective against ice. But if you get like 3 or 4 inches of snow, I'm not really quite sure what salt and grit will do. Of course, then they have to think of the safety of the drivers as well. But I can't answer on the council's behalf. And as I say, we invited someone on to speak to us. Send all the ministers whose seats are in danger in the next election to a cushy number in Brussels. Well, there's also the Senate as well, the Shannon. That's always a handy place to send people if they're deselected. Can you please find out how does the referendum fit into the situation where a child is a member of two families, his, her mum's, and their dad's post-separation or divorce? Indeed, I'm not really even sure the wording has been finalised, but we will get right across all of that in the weeks and months ahead. What's the road like from Buncrana to Belfast International Airport? Well, you heard there. Listen, the gritters aren't out. There's some gritting on the M1. The A4, the A3, but it's limited. And you're being asked, the Northern Ireland authorities are saying don't travel unless you have to travel. So that's the only thing I can pass on to you is that advice. Any report on road conditions of the road from Dunfanaghy to Letterkenny? That comes in from John. If you want to let us know, please do. Back with more after a short break. Just a note from the council. All teams are out this morning and routes are being monitored and actioned as required. Some routes require additional ploughing and treatment. The main message from the council is to avoid unnecessary journeys. Use gritted routes if you have to travel, even if that means a longer journey, and drive at a speed appropriate to the conditions. So that is the message from the council there. Noel Sheridan's on with me now. Good morning, Noel.
Good morning.
Right, okay. So your situation goes back really to Christmas. What happened to you?
Basically, what happened was I've got a suspected insect bite on the leg, and it became infected rather quickly. And I went via ambulance to Letterkenny ED, and I was left for a good number of hours before being assessed, if you catch my drift.
Did you go to the GP first? Did the GP refer you to the ED, Noel?
Basically, what happened, 2 days before that, I went to NOUDOC, and what happened was they gave me a prescription for the antibiotics, so it would tide me over to my own GP reopened in the new year. But my respiratory system started failing on New Year's Day, so I had to phone an ambulance myself via 999.
Right, so you were 27 hours in a wheelchair in the DED, then you got a bed, and you were told you'd need 10 days of intravenous antibiotics, obviously, presumably, to avoid sepsis or something of those along those lines. So were you in hospital for 10 days on antibiotics?
No, I was in basically for just under five. I'm not entirely sure what the reason was. They said my blood count was improving, so they were going to switch me to oral antibiotic.
All right.
But since then, I have been on oral antibiotic, and the leg has not really improved that much.
And we those watching the show can see it's very red. It doesn't look like it looks incredibly infected. You went back to your GP on Monday. They took a look at it. Did they send you back to the ED?
They wrote a letter to say that this is an extremely severe case, on their opinion, and that I would need to be medical and intervention happen again. And basically, I went into the waiting area with the letter on ED, so forth. And after that, what happened was that I waited then for approximately 4 to 5 hours, and the triage nurse seen me again. And then after another 4 to 5 hours, nothing was doing. So it was approximately 11 p.m. at night at this stage. I went down approximately about 2 p.m. in the day. 11 p.m. I turned around, and I have sleep apnea, so I require medical intervention for that at night, so I cannot sleep on a wheelchair or a trolley.
Mm-hmm. So what's your situation now? So you had to leave at that point. Are you still taking the antibiotics? Have you finished the antibiotics? How are you feeling? What's your situation now, Noel?
I am still taking the antibiotics. I have got a repeat prescription from the GP. And I am waiting to see, is this going to help the situation? And after that, then I have to make a decision what I'm doing. But I don't see a further point in, as regards the triage system for my leg. It doesn't seem to be severe enough to be checked out immediately, because it seems that in that system, more serious cases get pushed past me, and so I could be left sitting again for a long, very long period of time.
But with this leg as it is, inflamed and red, and the concerns your GP has, I mean, you must be sitting at home worried if this is going to spread. Is this going to kill you?
The bottom line is, if they say that if it hits the bone, then there is a worry of the sepsis and deep sepsis, which means at the end of the line scale, it would be leg amputation. But I hope it never, ever, ever, ever comes near.
No,
that.
Very unlikely it will, but it's always going to be a worry. Well, so what is your situation now? You're going to see if the antibiotics can work at all, but you've no faith to go back into the ED. You know what your GP will say. You're kind of stuck at the moment, just praying that the antibiotics work, Noel.
That's basically it, because to go on the next step, to go private, you have to get referred by a consultant, and that could be difficult under the present circumstances as well.
All right.
Because they probably deem that you need to go to ED again.
Okay, Noel. Well, listen, we're up against the news at 10. We've heard your story. We'll make some inquiries. Obviously, you say you wanted to speak to highlight how you're being treated, how the medical service works. It's not a very pleasant experience. We hope you get better soon. But for now, Noel, thank you very much for joining us. We'll be back after the news and obituary notices, which will be about a minute later than normal.